Welcome to Just Curious Media. This is Let's Talk Movies, and I'm Jason Connell. On the show today, I'm joined by special guest, Sal Rodriguez.
Thank you, Jason. My pleasure to be here.
Sal, it is wonderful to have you back. And today, we'll be talking about The Fly.
Yes, big time excited.
The 1986 Fly, written and directed by David Cronenberg, and not the 1958 Vincent Price film.
No, although people should see that. I definitely recommend it.
Yeah, I do need to see it. It's long overdue, and maybe now after we do this podcast, I will add that film to my watch list.
Well, if you like a movie that's basically a remake, if you like the movie, you definitely should see the original.
I agree. And for some reason, it was missed, but I'd say I'm a little bit behind on movies from the 50s. 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and on, I got it covered. But it's probably time to go back.
Yeah.
So this movie was also co-written by Charles Edward Pogue. And it's classified as a drama, horror, sci-fi. And I think that's a pretty accurate description. Sal, thoughts?
Well, just curious where the drama comes in.
Because you say tears.
Oh, well, okay. Okay, yeah. Okay, it's not like a Friday the 13th movie.
Exactly. Right?
Okay, yeah. There's more of
there's a relationship.
Drama. Yeah, okay, that's true. All right, I'll go for that.
All right, you're on board. I like it.
Yeah, I got it.
And so I always like to give the ratings, as you know, and the audience knows, but it's a 7.6 rating on IMDb and a 92% on Rotten Tomatoes.
That's 92 out of 100, right?
Exactly.
That sounds like definitely one of the highest ratings that I've heard from you.
Well, I tend to pick movies in the 90s. No, okay. I look it up after the fact. I promise.
I did not know that this movie was so well received. I mean, I saw this movie when it first came out. I was very young. Jeff Goldblum in our family, I mean, my mother and I have met Jeff Goldblum. My mother worked as a consultant in the movie Vibes when it was Jeff Goldblum and Cyndi Lauper.
Yes.
I went to the set. I met Jeff Goldblum. He was fantastic. I met Cyndi Lauper. She was fantastic. So Jeff Goldblum sort of became the friend of a family, you know, not really the friend, but you know what I mean? Like if he was in something, we were going to see it.
Right. Yeah. And you had the connection. You're one degree away from Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah, that's right. And so, yeah, definitely saw this movie when I was young, but did not know that it was so well received. I didn't know.
You just thought it was the Rodriguez household. It was well received.
Sure. I didn't know the whole nation cared.
So you saw it, I guess, when it came out in the theater? Did you see it that soon? Okay.
Definitely.
I saw it in the 80s, but it was on VHS. Mm-hmm. I didn't see it in the theater. And the movie actually came out August 15th, 1986, to be exact.
Nice.
Budget for this movie? What, any guesses?
You said 86?
I did say 86.
Okay, I'm going to say $30 million.
Cut that in half.
Whoa.
$15 million budget.
Now, wait a second. I recently heard your Let's Talk Movies Wall Street edition. $15 million budget, yes?
Exactly.
And they're very different movies. So it's interesting how people can work within the same budget.
Now, this movie was also shot in Toronto. So maybe that helped shave some of that cost.
You know? Stretch the dollar.
And besides, it's a really small cast of Wall Street. You know, you have this ridiculous cast. It's shot in New York City. So, yeah. I mean, and they were shot a year apart. So, but maybe because of the fact they shot in Canada, saved them some money. So, the U.S. gross for this movie, according to IMDb, these numbers could be far outdated, $40,456,000. So, pretty good return on investment and maybe why they made a sequel, which we'll talk about later.
I'm also thinking that this was Jeff Goldblum at his peak. This was his peak movie, I would probably say.
That's a good point. This was when Goldblum was the leading man in movies.
Yes, yes, the
was
starring
a
role. Starring
pretty
role.
Big movie. So yeah, this might have been Goldblum either peaked or peaking. But you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right.
I mean, every other movie I think of Jeff Goldblum as supporting.
Yeah. So before this, I remember seeing him in a really bit part in Annie Hall. Then he would go on to have a bigger role in The Big Chill. Into the Night, he was the lead character in that John Landis film with Michelle Pfeiffer. And then he was also the lead in Transylvania 6-5000, which was right before this. So yeah, probably leading up to this opportunity with Cronenberg, which our audiences may or may not know, Jeff Goldblum and Gina Davis were in a relationship at the time making this movie. They were both in Transylvania 6-5000. Then they went on to be in this movie. And then they went on to be in another movie, Earth Girls Are Easy. So they made like three movies back to back to back together.
Oh, because Jeff Goldblum did that. Remember, it was a made-for-TV movie, played Ichabod Crane, The Legend of Sleepy Hollow.
I never saw that, actually.
Yeah, yeah. Because, you know, when people think of the Johnny Depp motion picture, but before
that, it's a great movie. That's also a Tim Burton film.
It's No, it's great. And what's his name? Christopher Walken.
Yes.
But before that was Jeff Goldblum as Ichabod Crane. And I believe it was a made-for-TV movie.
That's interesting. Well, he would actually do that well. So I might have to check that out.
The description of Ichabod Crane is Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah, he looks like that. He's tall and lanky.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, he would go on to be in movies like Independence Day, the Jurassic Park franchise. I mean, Jeff Goldblum's a star. No doubt about it. But his star probably never shined as brightly as it did when he made The Fly. And it was a super success even outside of the Rodriguez household.
Wait, you know what I will also add to this? Okay, even if one may argue it was not his peak, even if one may have a legitimate argument, this was not his peak.
Goldblum might argue.
Hang on. His sexiest. Oh, this yeah, was his sexiest role.
Well, half of the film.
Okay, all right. Okay, one-third. One-third of the film.
One-third is hot, and then it's like not so hot. So now the synopsis for this movie, which I always like to give like the elevator pitch for the movie, is a brilliant but eccentric scientist begins to transform into a giant man-fly hybrid after one of his experiments goes horribly wrong. That's a pretty good description, I would say.
I don't think anybody in the 80s ever referenced the word hybrid when being descriptive of this movie. I think that's was a newer term that somebody applied back in time to this movie, but I don't think that he was a hybrid whatsoever.
What's a term they use in the movie? They use...
Well, I would definitely say, and this is a sci-fi term, sci-fi 101, a mutation.
A mutation. So besides your knock on the fact that it sounds like a more updated version of the synopsis, would you say it's still accurate beyond that?
Sure.
Okay, good. Because I wrote it. No, I didn't write it. It's on IMDb. All right, so let's talk about the rest of the cast, which is pretty small, Sal, because honestly...
It's basically a three-person cast.
Exactly. Besides, there's a cameo, which I'll hint at. But I should also say that we've already talked about Jeff Goldblum, but let's just quickly say his character name, which is Seth Brundle.
Yes.
And that morphs as the movie goes on, but we'll hold that. We'll keep that close to the vest right now. Now, Gina Davis is the second lead in the movie, and she plays Veronica Ronnie Coif. Now, I love that she's got a nickname, which is what we go by, but for audience's sake, or for the sake of credits, it's Veronica, which I don't think anyone ever calls her Veronica.
Well, there's only a couple people who reference her.
Right. There's only two. Yeah.
Yeah.
But every time they say her name, it's Ronnie. So in my book, she's okay. Ronnie. But I remember seeing Gina Davis on this TV show that I absolutely loved in the 80s called Buffalo Bill. And here's why I loved it. Dabney Coleman was the lead.
Oh.
And I already had grown fond of Dabney Coleman and his acting from War Games and 9 to 5 and anything else he was in on Golden Pond. And I saw her on there and immediately it's like, wow, who's that? She was on my radar. And just quickly, if I may, I was fortunate enough to meet Dabney Coleman at the United Film Festival one night when we screened On Golden Pond and honored him and director Mark Rydell, who directed the movie. And then a couple years later, made a documentary, a biodoc about Dabney Coleman called Not Such a Bad Guy, Conversations with Dabney Coleman. And it was an amazing experience. He's a wonderful person as well as he is talented. And there's my Dabney Coleman plug.
You know what? You're the only other person I've ever known in my entire life who has ever even referenced Dabney Coleman. And then beyond that, you make a documentary about him. My Dabney Coleman is that I worked as an extra in the Slap Maxwell story at least a couple of times. So definitely I saw him in person. I don't think I had any interaction, he and I. But so I worked as an extra on the Slap Maxwell story. Years go by, I meet you. Years go by, nobody in my life has referenced Dabney Coleman except for you.
Well, there you have it. Were you not there that night at the United Film Festival when he came out? You were probably at the other theater that night.
Yeah. No, I would have remembered if I would have seen him there. I don't think I was there.
So, and back to Gina Davis now. She was also in Fletch, incredible movie. And she was in Transformers 5000. But post The Fly, it also launched her career. She would go on to do Thelma and Louise, A League of Their Own, and many other films. In fact, I saw her on a show very close to my heart as well, which is Glow, Netflix's Glow. She was on the last season. And of course, it excites me because, you know, my connection to the Glow documentary. And then it was amazing to see Gina Davis go from that movie to be in the show. I thought, wow, it kind of came full circle. But I have always been a big fan of hers. And I really think the chemistry between them is very real, and maybe because they were just so close.
Okay, so when they shot this movie, they were already dating?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, because, you know, I definitely wanted to talk about that because she pretty much comes on to him. I mean, I know we're going to take it, we're going to get there, but she comes on to him. I mean, he comes on to her, but then it goes professional and then she comes on to him.
Yeah, she does. She absolutely does. You're right. She takes the lead and runs with it. Of course, she's also a journalist, but we're about to get into that. The last main character is played by John Getz.
Yeah, a mainstay of 80s movies, I would say. A staple.
The staple. And his character's name, which cracks me up in its own right, it's Stathis Brannis.
Yeah, interesting.
What a name. What a, you know, blue blood name that is. Stathis, get in here. I mean, this guy grew up very privileged, I would think.
Did you look at his office? I mean, seriously, amazing. What magazine editor has an office like that?
Particle
today?
Magazine, whatever that is, but that's what he's...
Some sort of can you imagine a science magazine guy? Yeah. A science magazine editor has an office like that.
Right. Well, that name, come on.
With a name like that.
He was in Blood Simple, which is Coen Brothers' first film and absolutely amazing, and he's great in it. And Sal, you may or may not know this, but he's also in The Fly 2.
You know what? I want to see The Fly 2.
Okay.
I do. Because this movie ends in a way that makes anyone want to see The Fly 2 or at least say, well, hey, geez, I may want to think about seeing it anyway.
Well, I thought the same thing, and then I watched The Fly 2 again recently. I hadn't seen it since it first came out, and I quickly realized why I didn't remember it that fondly. But we'll save that for a podcast, or not, down the road.
I'm bummed out now.
And the only other person I want to mention in the cast is David Cronenberg. The writer-director plays the gynecologist.
Wait, he plays the gynecologist in the real waking sequence or the dream sequence?
The latter.
Okay.
So as far as Cronenberg goes, he was coming off Scanners, Videodrome, and The Dead Zone, and then landed The Fly, which I also think shot him to new heights. And he's a very prolific filmmaker, always has a dark tone to his movies, which I've always appreciated. History of Violence is a movie that I highly recommend if you haven't seen it. And always been a big fan, so it was really excited to see him make this film. And I kind of want to highlight two other people from the crew because they would win an Oscar, was Chris Wallace and Stephen Dubois. And they did the makeup and creature design in this movie, which is phenomenal, Sal.
Yeah. Definitely. Well, of course, for the fans of practical effects, you are in for a treat, of course.
Because they didn't just make a creature. They made one that was slowly mutating over time. They made a lot of creatures and a lot of effects. And so it's an amazing work that they did because it wasn't just like create that, boom. They just had to kind of go with Goldblum on his journey. And they nailed it. And they did a great job. They both won an Oscar. And Chris Wallace would go on to direct The Fly, too. So no disrespect to Chris Wallace. He's amazing. But his strength was probably not the creation of Fly 2. It was mainly the amazing makeup and creature design of Fly 1 and many other movies that he worked on.
Wouldn't it be funny if I watched The Fly 2 and absolutely fell in love with it?
Well, you might be one of the only people that would have that reaction to it.
Well, I mean, Eric Stoltz, he's fantastic.
Actually, I really like the setup for what it is. It's just where it starts to go and kind of, just watch it. Just watch it.
I will watch it.
I looked at Fly 2 with, wow, there's so much potential here. Oh, they're going that way. That's kind of how I felt. But there was never a Fly 3, and maybe that's a good thing. Or someone could come along and reboot Fly 2, pick it right back up where this movie Fly 1 ends. I mean, there's room for that.
And what about Superfly?
Well, that's a whole other thing. But very cool. Lastly, before we get into the scenes, I just want to give a shout out to Howard Shore, who was the composer of the film. Great score, as usual. And he also did other movies such as Silence of the Lambs, Philadelphia, Seven, The Departed, and on and on and on. He's worked on a lot of great films along the way. So here we go, Sal. Into the meat of the movie, the scenes, where we like to break it down chronologically, go through the timeline, and give our opinions on such. So we start off with a scientist party / mixer. And Ronnie is interviewing scientists, and bam, her and Goldblum are talking. I mean, it's like the opening few seconds, they're in conversation.
It's funny you say scientist party. When do you ever hear those two words together?
You do not.
It's a scientist party. Who could ask for more?
These guys know how to party. So, but I love how fast this movie gets into it. There's not a lot of messing around. Like, she's interviewing him. He's kind of hitting on her, like you said earlier. And Seth invites her over. Like, that's it. And we're not 2 or 3 minutes into the movie, Sal, and she's literally driving him to his house.
Well, okay, so this is where I'm starting to think that maybe she had the hots for him early on. She had her poker face on in the beginning, but maybe she liked him right away, because surely this woman, as a journalist out there going to parties, is used to guys hitting on her. You know, this is nothing new to have a guy hit on her. And yet this one she goes for and winds up at his place.
I think she was there for legitimate reasons. I think he told her that he was working on something great. It's going to change the world. And I think she bought him. Yeah, she was caught up in his charisma. I believe that to be true. But I think she went there. She was intrigued by her journalistic integrity. That's what I think. But it just happened so fast. It's like, bam, bam. She was going to interview two other guys, skips that. And what cracks me up as well, Sal, is that she's not just driving to his place. She's driving him to his place. So how did he get there to the party? Is he a cab guy? Does he not own a car? I know he says later he doesn't like automobiles or things like that.
He says he has motion sickness.
Motion sickness. So,
but even as a passenger, he has motion sickness. Yeah. Not just when he's driving. Yeah, so he's screwed in any way, whether has his own car or has a taxi, he's screwed.
And that may be the exact reason Seth Brundle has created the teleportation device to cure his motion sickness and change mankind as we know it.
Wow. Whoa, my mind has been blown right now.
So they go to his place, and I love how she's calling the telepods phone booths, and he's taking offense to that right away. Like, he keeps correcting her.
Hang on. They get to his place, and to the entrance is like in this back dark alley that, I mean, I'm a healthy guy. I wouldn't want to walk through this alley, let alone like some late night tryst. You know, you got to hand it to her. I mean, she's pretty brave.
She's a journalist.
Yeah, I got to hand it to her. She's going for the story. She's committing. So she winds up with Brundle, Seth Brundle, at his place within like, the first 5 minutes of the movie.
But Ronnie is a bit slow to the stockings being teleported. He asks to, do you have anything? She has no jewelry. She doesn't wear jewelry. Takes off a stocking and he teleports it. And let me just back up for a second. These telepods are awesome looking, Sal.
They remind me of something out of Aliens or Prometheus.
Yeah.
They have that sort of look.
Yes, I agree. Yeah, they're very sci-fi looking, but Cronenberg really got it right. The designs of these things are just cool. And I like that, Seth lives in this big loft. It just works for the scene. We didn't go to some real lab. We went to something more cozy, but he's just a kind of a mad scientist. He's always tinkering around, but I really like the set design. It really just makes it a place you want to hang out.
It's like an artist loft type of place, right?
Yeah. But they could have done anything. They could have really taken this to some sterile, overlit lab, but they didn't. And that was a really good choice.
Yeah.
And so when she finally understands that this wasn't some big microwave and that she lost her stockings, you could just see the light bulb go off and Ronnie is super impressed and she wants to do a story on Brundle and his telepods. She knows she's got her story.
Yeah, well, she breaks out the cassette recorder.
Yes.
Starts recording, right?
Well, and it wasn't a mini cassette, which became very popular in the 80s and 90s. This was full-size cassette tape.
Sure.
Old school.
And what was interesting is she tried to be stealthy when she first pressed play, but then all cumbersome when she changed the cassette.
Yeah, there's like a reminder, like beep, 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 beep.
Yeah.
She's like, you
are recording. You are recording.
Let me change this 8-track around. Hang on a second. Let me fumble with this for a second.
Okay, so at this moment in time, when she's fumbling with the cassette and he realizes, hey, what are you doing recording? I don't want you to record. I couldn't tell if he was being serious. Did he really not want her to record? I mean, obviously, he invites a journalist over to his place and spills his guts. So I didn't understand his motives at this time.
I think he wanted to get someone interested and then shadow him. But yeah, that should have been talked about. He's selling it at the party. I'm going to change the world. Hang on a second. It's off the record. Off the record. Yeah, you're exactly right about that.
Don't tell anybody.
Hey, come here. I'm going to tell you something. You can't tell a soul, but you're a journalist. So yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
He's obviously beneath the surface, Al. They're both attracted to each other. So that's also there. Yes.
That's what I'm thinking. So he flirted with her. She responded. And the journalism is almost as an aside. I mean, these are two people who are into each other.
I think it's there. I think it's beneath the surface. I don't think it's the driving force. But we could agree to disagree on that.
Okay, then hang on then. If she's really legitimately there as a journalist, then in The Fly 2, there should be a book then at this time, right?
There should be. And that's why someone needs to make the new Fly 2.
Oh.
That's okay. That's a job. Someone could do that. I think it's time for that sequel.
Okay, with starring Zac Efron.
Okay. Sounds good. Very marketable out of the gate.
He's on my short list.
Yes. All right. So now we're at Monolith Publishing. And that's a really nice homage to Stanley Kubrick's 2001 Space Odyssey. The Monolith. I like that. And Ronnie plays this recording to her editor, Stathis Baranis. And Sal, he's just not impressed. He thinks this guy's a wacko.
There's not much to be impressed by from that recording, I would say. I get that he needs more. I would need more too, I think.
But he leaves the room, and what cracks me up is, I mean, this is his office, not hers, and there's a knock on the door, and it's Seth? Kind of weird. Yeah. He just shows up at Monolith Publishing to say, you know, don't call her, guy who hates to travel in automobiles. Don't call her on the phone and set something up. Show up where she works to tell her, you know, you got to do a story on me. Kind of funny. I don't know if you needed that scene. I don't know if you had any thoughts on that.
Well, I think we're seeing the character. He's very forward. He's unabashed, as they say. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. So I got to hand it to him. He's whatever he's doing. Again, I still don't know what he's doing. Does he want to have the story? Does he not want to have the story? Because remember when Gina Davis says about her editor, he thinks you're a wacko or a psycho or something. And he goes, oh, good.
Oh, good. They're not going to put me in this thing, but I need you. Exactly. I need you. I think he needs like a muse, or he needs someone to share this with. It's all in his head. And so maybe that's part of it. He feels he can trust her. Yes, Sal, he's attracted to her. And maybe there's a bond there that this lonely scientist doesn't have.
Well, yeah, I guess his baboons can't fulfill all your needs, right?
No. So that scene, which is fine. I just felt like it wasn't very practical. I think he could have called her just as easy or said, hey, come over. I want to tell you some more stuff. But he went to her, but they go to lunch. And at lunch, this is when he pitches her on not doing a story, but doing a book on his creation. Yeah. So it's long form. They can, you know, see the process unfold and not just, you know, piece that's going to come out and expose his thing before it's really ready. That's kind of a nice idea. It makes sense to me.
He's basically saying, be my biographer.
Exactly.
Yes, next level.
So that's another reason why he's dismissing the editor, because this is what he wants. She could be that person. And who better than Ronnie?
Okay, so right now then I get it. Okay, he wants to be immortalized at this time then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now Ronnie goes to her apartment and finds, of all people, Stathis. And what's he doing, Sal?
Yeah, yeah. In the shower, taking a shower. Like it's like the middle of the day, it seems.
Yeah, just a little shower.
Yeah. And then he said, I was feeling kind of slimy. Thought I'd take a shower.
Yeah. I'd say a little slimy. Yes, for sure. And what else do we find out?
We learn that her editor, who's in her shower, was her former boyfriend, former lover.
And used to live there.
Yeah, he used to live there. He has a key to the apartment because she gave it to him.
Yeah, that is kind of weird. Now, this is Stathis Baranis, who's editor of Particle Magazine. I believe he came up the ranks with money and privilege, and he used to live in this tiny apartment with Ronnie Coif.
Wait, are you talking about the apartment that he's showering in, her apartment?
Yes.
It doesn't look that small. Jeez.
Have you seen this guy's office? I'm just saying, Sal, he'd most likely have Ronnie live with him.
Well, his office is very impressive, and yes, with his name and most likely his pedigree, yeah, he's got a nice place.
And may I add this from the sequel? It just hit me. You do see his home in the sequel.
Whoa.
But now we're at Brundle's lab and Ronnie's filming Seth do an experiment. And Sal, I take a little issue with this, and I know you do too, because we've discussed it before, but he's going to use a live animal. And at lunch, just a couple scenes ago, he tells her, oh, well, last time I did a live animal, it didn't go so well. But
yeah.
What's he doing now, Sal?
Okay, all we've seen so far is him teleport a nylon stocking.
Yes.
That's all we've seen.
That was it.
Okay, Now,
the stakes weren't very high.
15 minutes later, he has a baboon, a live baboon, in telepod number one.
Yep.
Ready to teleport. Wouldn't you do some bananas, some eggplants?
Yes, yes.
Wouldn't you do a mouse?
A lab rat.
Wouldn't you do like 150 things before you get to the baboon after having only done a nylon stocking?
I may even do a fly.
How about anything that can move? A caterpillar, anything.
I totally agree. However, this movie, as we've talked about, it's moving very quickly. This is only a 90-plus minute movie. And they don't mess around on beats. Yes, they needed something in between stockings and live baboon, but the baboon does look cool.
Okay, so this scene is where we are introduced to the horrors of the fly.
Yes, and Ronnie is filming, and I love, Sal, that she's filming with a super beta movie camcorder.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I'd love to have my hands on that right now. And she's filming, and what happens in this first experiment is not good. Seems to start fine. Teleportation works, leaves telepod one, but telepod two, not so good.
No. Very, very sad for the animal lover. Very sad.
And essentially the baboon gets churned inside out.
It's a horrible mess. Horrible mess.
And so Seth.
And hang on, to get into more horror here. So here's this inside out baboon, still alive.
Still alive.
I thought to myself, what is to become of this baboon? Is Seth Brundle have to euthanize? He's going to have to destroy this beast.
Yes.
That's pretty terrible. I'm glad they didn't show that.
I saw enough to make me sad. Yeah, and the way they expose this is you have the one telepod, and then it disappears, that 80s graphic, something like Terminator or Weird Science. And then the second telepod, there's always like fog and smoke.
Yes.
And then you just, all of a sudden you see like a bloody arm or some sort of appendage hit the glass. Because we didn't really describe the telepods because it's more of a visual thing, but there's also a glass door, which is really good for effect. And just through the smoke, you see this thing and not good. And I love the way it opens and closes too. Very high tech. Opens and the door. And then they see this baboon inside out. And so, I'm with you. They didn't have to show any more. That was enough. And essentially, Seth goes on to explain that the computer just can't recognize flesh. And that's the problem at this point in time. And Seth's really depressed after this. And that's, he knows what he did, morally and ethically wrong, and probably should have tested several things before the poor baboon. But he's distraught.
And this is where they go into the stakes, right?
Well, no, that's coming. It's coming.
Okay.
So he's distraught. She's recording his reaction, and he just like, I want to stop recording. And he retires in the bedroom because he's just kind of, he's just trying to think, what's wrong? Well, I got to figure this out. How does this keep happening? Because this isn't the first baboon or live animal this has happened to. It's the only first one that we've seen.
Yes. Do not ask your friend Seth to pet sit for you.
No, please don't. And so then there's kind of an off scene where she mentions him changing. How come you never change? And then he's like, I change every day. This is a fresh pair of clothes. And she goes to his closet and Sal, it's pretty funny what she discovers.
Yeah, it's one of these things that they say Bill Gates does this.
Obama had two suits.
Yeah, where you like have just a tiny amount of clothes because these guys believe that you can expend lots of time and energy messing around with what you're going to wear. So why not just knock that out of your life and just wear the same damn thing all the time? I think it's an interesting thought. Nothing that appeals to me personally. I like a variety of clothing. Therefore, my time is wasted on choosing my attire.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's what you have for Seth Brundle. You look in his closet, you see basically this like three or four of those tweed jackets.
It's like five sets of the same clothes.
Yeah.
And
it's
shoes.
The same outfit.
Not just like the jacket, it's the shoes. I mean, the jacket and the shoes you might be able to get away with. Just have a bunch of shirts and ties. But no, he's got the same outfit. That's pretty funny. So if there is a Seth Brundle action figure, because you're a toy collector, does it come with the multiple suits and the little closet?
There actually is a Brundlefly action figure made by McFarlane Toys. Came out about maybe 20 years ago, maybe 15, 20 years ago. It is him in his final form.
Yes.
It is a horrific figurine. It is for the horror toy collectible lovers only, I would say. It is hideous.
Do you have it?
But A Beautiful Homage. No, I don't have it.
You need a Brundlefly.
I need a Brundlefly. So it is on my list. It's on my wish list. But yeah, look for McFarlane Toys Brundlefly. Came out about 15 years ago.
All right. So now, Sal, depressed Seth is then sort of propositioned or hit on again by Ronnie. And this leads to a night of passion.
Yeah, he's laying there on the bed, right, kind of lamenting and, you know, oh, why aren't things going, you know, the way they should? And she walks over to the bed and starts making out and crawls on top of him.
She grabs his tie and is real subtle. And yeah, and that's, you know, they have their, you know, their moment. They have their sex scene. Well, we don't see the sex scene, but we know what happens. And I like that after it's over and we come back in, he kind of rolls over in this microprocessor that was on his bed. Scientists have microprocessors like all over the place. And
Laying in their sheets.
He's like, oh, I was wondering what happened to that. But it sticks into his back. And that's a great little nugget in the movie. And then she removes it and it hurts and she's going to kiss it. And she does. And do you have any disinfectant? No, it's going to be fine. But, you know, now audience knows that, you know, that had happened and that will come back into play.
Yeah, there is a cut on his back.
So now Seth decides to get up. He's got some energy post-sex. He has an idea. Because she had mentioned earlier, I brought some steaks, but they just didn't cook them yet. They got busy with this experiment and the failed experiment. And his idea is to teleport the steaks.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea. I think it's a fantastic idea. I just want to know why this didn't happen 20 minutes early. Yeah. That's what I want to know.
We had the sex scene, Sal. It's, come on. This is like building a house. It's building a movie. Yeah, I don't know. I'm with you.
I just didn't like seeing that poor baboon.
No.
Poor baboon.
Well, that, you know, I say the one thing about that scene, and yes, it was grotesque and sad, but it raised the stakes. We as an audience see the nylon work. We hear him say one comment about, nah, it didn't go very well. But then you see just how bad it can be. Yeah, it raised the whole game.
Well, if I would have seen the nylon, I would have thought it was a trick. I would have thought that some sort of vacuum hose sucked up the nylon out of this one and pushed it through the other side. I would have thought it was a wonderful, elaborate trick.
Like the banks that used to have the thing get sucked in. Drive-through
banks. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, I think the old pharmacies had that too.
Yeah. So they want to do a taste test. There's two steaks, cooks them both, teleports one, and can just, you know, have Ronnie do the taste test. He doesn't even do it, which is funny to me. I don't know why he doesn't, but he asks her. And she says what, Sal, about the tasting the one that went through the telepod?
Okay, she tried the normal, regular, unaffected steak.
Yep.
She said it tastes fine. She goes, oh, it could use seasoning or whatever. But then she tried the teleported steak.
Yep.
She quickly spit it out. She says, ugh, taste, what did she say, synthetic?
Synthetic.
Yeah, tastes synthetic.
And then he knew, like, from that, again, he doesn't taste it. He just trusts her, which I think that, you know, you could have also taken a bite. But he thinks, wow, okay, that's it. The computer is having a hard time with flesh. I know what to do. I'll train it. You know, this is like...
Yeah, because like you said earlier, he said computers are dumb. They only know what you tell them to know.
So then he goes like weird science. He's just going to plug a bunch of stuff in this computer and teach it to identify flesh. So now Ronnie's leaving. It's the morning. And she gets in her car and she's driving away.
Mm-hmm.
As Ronnie pulls away, who do we see doing some sort of stakeout?
Stathis. Being creepy.
Yeah, he's good at being creepy, man.
Yeah, he's really good in this role. I mean, we're going to see an arc, but I like him. And yeah, he's stalking his ex-girlfriend. He's being very inappropriate.
He shows up at her house and he's in the shower.
Okay, yes.
And then he goes to this person's house that she's doing a story on, but he stays there all night because he sees her car there and just waits for her to leave. You know, I would say this, Sal, if you're going to stalk someone and you go to where you think they are and you see their car, that's all you needed to know. But he stays there all night.
Wow. Well, he's committed. You don't become a magazine editor by not sticking your nose to the grindstone. You know, this guy's committed.
And I'd say
I don't think I've ever done that. I've never parked myself outside of a girlfriend's house or apartment or her lover or whatever all night long. I would never do such a thing.
And I think a guy like this usually gets his way. So maybe this is just too foreign for him. Like, wait a second. She's rejected me and she's with this guy. So it's probably too much for a guy like this to bear. His ego is just too big. But I also like the fact that his license plate is vanity plate. Do you remember what it said?
I remember it was a vanity plate, but I don't remember what it said.
Particle. Particle magazine.
Interesting.
Anyway, so now Ronnie's going shopping because she's going to get Seth some clothes, man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And while she's shopping, what happens?
She's there shopping for like a leather jacket, it looks like.
Yeah, something hip and cool.
Yeah, she wants to get her new lover a nice gift, very nice gift. And yeah, Stathis is there in the store. He's like right in front of me, turns around.
He even drops to his knee at some point in time, or his knees.
Yeah, yeah, he makes a scene in this department store is what he does.
Yes, and he wants her back, and it's pathetic is what it is. And guess what, Sal? When you go to these extremes, I would say it would have the opposite effect on a woman.
Well, from my experience, that answer would be yes, definitely. Don't do this. If it were a romantic comedy, maybe.
Yeah, exactly.
But definitely not in a drama and definitely not in a horror film.
And it would work the other way around. If a female's throwing themselves at a guy, anytime you see just desperation oozing out of somebody, it's a turnoff. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's true. And I speak from experience.
Yes, yeah. So it's a kind of a funny scene. There's your comedy. There's your comedy for this movie. So now we're back at Seth's and it's baboon experiment number two.
Yes. And I'm keeping my fingers crossed and I'm trying to remain hopeful.
I'm with you. So we do the whole bit again, different baboon. I think it's the baboon's brother.
Yes.
And
yes.
He does the teleportation. Pod one works, pod two, and the door opens, the smoke comes out. And here comes this amazing, healthy baboon and jumps into Seth Brundle's arms.
Yeah. I like that moment because I'm imagining that Jeff Goldblum had to kind of befriend this baboon for the movie, right?
Yeah. There was a rapport there. That was really cool.
Oh, he jumped right in his arms. It really looked really great.
Yeah. It was cool. I don't even know what kind of baboons these are, if there's a specific name. But I tell you, this guy is cool looking. You know,
it wasn't one of those ones with the big red butts. I don't think it was one of those ones.
This is like a high-end one. But they're intelligent. He was saying things to him in the next scene. It's like, wow, that baboon's really playing along with Goldblum. It was really good. So it's a celebratory moment. Seth's calling in like some takeout food, some Chinese food. They're going to have a great night. But the celebration is cut short because Ronnie discovers something. Something that her editor, Stathis, sent to Seth and he hadn't looked at it yet. And he's like, oh yeah, that came, they slipped underneath the door, and she opens it up and it's a Particle magazine mock-up. Yes. And it's got Seth Brundle on the cover, kind of like you would see on like a science magazine. It's like an animated portrait of him and it talks about his experiment and just showing.
I liked it. I thought it looked really great.
It was cool.
Yeah, I liked it.
But Seth hadn't seen it yet, thank goodness, because this is the last thing in the world he wants. I mean, Ronnie's doing a biography on him and videotaping things along the way, but she does not show it to him, to Seth. And she says, I'll be back. I've got to go deal with something. And she leaves. So she goes to Monolith. She doesn't go to her place where she could find Stathis more often than not in the shower. She goes to Monolith Publishing because he's still at the office, I guess. It's at night. And they're talking about the Brundle story. And it's essentially, I guess he's asking to stay in the loop. Like he won't move forward on this story. She can do her thing, but keep him abreast of things. He doesn't want to be cut out of the process.
He said something like, I don't want you out of my life, right?
Well, he also said that. Yeah, there's always that. He's kind of, I guess, after he felt as exposed as he was after the shopping incident, he then tried to have some leverage and send that thing to Seth. And so this is his way of reeling her back in. He knows that's going to bring Ronnie to him. He knows that. He's still her boss. He's still got some power.
Yeah.
In this day and age, Sal, I'm sorry, Stathis can't hold this over Ronnie's head.
Well, the truth is, if you look at a lot of movies, would say 10 years plus, there's going to be a little bit of a problematic situations.
Yeah. Doesn't make it right, Sal. Doesn't make it right.
Well, I always defer back to the time I went to the Grease sing-along, and there I was in a packed theater. Everybody's singing along with the Grease motion picture, and then we all got to the portion of Summer Lovin', when he says, did she put up a fight? And I swear there was a palpable shift in the air. I felt it.
The lyrics probably should be changed for the sing-along.
Well, since we're talking about Grease, if you look at the Grease Live that was done a couple years back, no cigarettes. And cigarettes are so prominent in the original motion picture. And now all of a sudden I'm watching Grease without a cigarette. And actually it looks weird without cigarettes.
That's interesting. Very interesting. All right. So while she's off meeting with Stathis, Seth had no idea where she went. You know, he's like, oh, man, I'm celebration mode. Just did my first successful live animal teleportation. And so Seth's been drinking and he's upset. He's talking to the baboon.
Yeah. And this is where that baboon is reacting.
Yes. And he also reacts to what?
Yeah. And there's a fly buzzing around the baboon's head as a little foreshadow. And the baboon is reacting to the fly. It was a real cool scene. I do like that scene with Seth Brundle, the baboon, and the fly.
Why don't you do a little fly noise for us? That's pretty good. And the baboon does look up and kind of like swipes at it and sees it.
Yeah.
I just love that Cronenberg just puts that in there. It's like perfect little, wow, there was the setup. It's perfect.
Yeah, because when it happens, I become very angry. When we get to our moment of truth, in a few scenes, it makes me angry.
So this is a great sequence. And so Seth is just really distraught. And I think he feels invincible. And he's got a little bit of that God complex going on. He's doing something that no one's done. And I would think the scientific field could be ultra competitive at times, especially if you're working on something for a long time. You want to keep it a secret. You don't want anyone else to do it. And when you feel like it's ready, you probably, you know, you want all the credit. Like you said, he went and essentially landed his own biographer. You know, he has his own agenda. It's not like he's just doing it for the good of mankind. He wants the credit, Sal.
Well, the scientific community is much like the space race. Everyone wants to be first.
Right, right.
And then if you look at the world of journalism, look, Ronnie wants to be first with her story. So everyone wants to be first, whether it be in science. Yeah, yeah. Greed is good.
Hey, wait, there you go. Wall Street. Nice. So now Seth is just convinced he's going to go through. He's ready to go through on his own. The baboon worked. And by the way, they talked before she left about, I'm going to go have the baboon tested to make sure he's okay. But the drinking, and he was upset that she left and assumed that Ronnie had gone back to her ex. So he's got all these jealousy things going through his mind as well. So he decides to teleport right then and there, puts the camera on. He has to be naked because he can't wear clothes in. So he goes in, and Sal, what do we see?
Yeah, this made me very upset because we see that very same fly, possibly the very same fly or a stand-in that was buzzing over the baboon's head. We see that fly go into Telepod One along with Seth Brundle. And the reason that made me very upset, because I thought to myself, why isn't this the most sterile environment? If you know that you're going to be broken down and teleported, everything in that pod is going to be broken down and teleported. That should be the most sterile thing.
Yeah.
And it was not. It's like, he goes in there so drunken and haphazard, cavalier, didn't wait on the baboon's test results.
Yeah.
At this juncture, very upset with Seth Brundle.
Yeah, he's not in his right mind. I think it's the God complex, and he rushed it. And I mean, we're only, a few telepods away from the accident. I think that would have that in my mind. It's like a space shuttle. It's like you would try so many missions or rockets without people and finally introduce people after you have a track record of successful launches. He's only got a couple. I think I would have a series of things. And then maybe someday you're ready for human teleport. But he's rushed it. I'm with you. But again, this movie is moving forward, Sal. We're moving very quickly. And this is the time to introduce it when you know where we're going in the movie.
Well, and this just always confirms what I say about horror and or sci-fi, is you have to rely on your cast making bad decisions.
Yes, absolutely.
Because if everyone makes wonderful decisions, there's the story over.
Yeah, exactly. So the fly goes in, it goes through the front door, and it goes to a window. And it's like a circular window, and it lands there. So the shot is like you see the fly, you see Brundle behind kneeling down, and then you see a close-up of the fly. In case you didn't see it, there's the fly.
Oh, yeah.
Door closes and the teleportation happens and it's a success. Or so we think it is.
Yeah, yeah. It looks successful.
Well, the computer says successful.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it was.
It was. Yeah, he made it through.
Yeah, it's not as he wanted, but it was successful according to the computer.
So now Ronnie comes back. It's much later that night. And Seth tells her that he went through. And she's shocked. Can't believe it, but kind of excited. And she's explaining, I guess, her past with Stathis, because that comes up. He's asking if she's in love with him. And so we shed light on that. There's your drama. You got a little love triangle going on. Mm-hmm. And this leads to what, Sal?
Now that you mention it, this love triangle, I'm almost thinking of Phantom of the Opera here.
Okay, you know, yeah.
We have a love triangle and we have a mutated creature, if you will. So very reminiscent. And then once we see the arc of Stathis, and I'm a big Phantom fan. So I'm just really at this present moment, just seeing little hints of Phantom here.
Yeah. So you're absolutely right. It's a really good comparison. This is kind of a modern tale of that. Yeah, there is a triangle. And there's only three people, but they're all really connected in various ways. And they all want something from the other person, which is interesting too. It's a really interesting, not just sexual dynamic. It's just their purpose. It's a cool cycle. I like it. It works. But what happens when she comes back and they have this discussion? It leads to them.
Oh, is this when they have sex?
Again, yes. But this time, Sal, Seth is no longer just Seth.
Oh, okay. So this is after he's teleported.
Yes.
So now we are at Seth 2.0 right now.
That's a good way to put it. Yes.
Right. And is this where he becomes a gymnast?
Almost, but I'm just kind of trying to throw you a softball. I'm just saying they've had sex and...
Okay, this is the first time they've had sex after he has done his teleportation.
Seth 2.0. So I'm just putting this out there for the audience to think about, for our listeners to think about. Wow, okay. So he is now some sort of fused man fly. Something's going on in his body and his molecular structure. And he slept with someone and most likely had no contraception.
I didn't see any Trojan wrappers on the nightstand.
I didn't either. I used that line before in our last podcast, but I like it. Good callback. Good callback. No, I used it. You took my line, but I like it.
No, but you know what, though? I had to reach later in the movie to go, oh, I didn't think about that right now. It didn't even occur to me that that could happen, that there could be something happening, something conceptualizing right now. You know, I didn't think about it.
Well, I can't remember what I was thinking in the 80s when I saw it, but now when I watch it, it's hard to go back and forget what you know, but I see it now. It's like, oh my gosh, it's so obvious that like something's not right about this if they're having sex now. And as they laid there, because we don't know anything's different about him yet. We just know there was a fly in said pod and he had a successful teleportation. We don't know anything else.
Yeah.
All we do know is when they're laying there, sleeping, post-sex, that fly, and go ahead and make the noise again. It's buzzing by, and I shouldn't say that fly, another fly. So Brundle's place has lots of flies. Maybe the baboons brought them in. But it goes by, while he's sleeping, he reaches up and grabs it with his hand. Pretty good instincts. Very Karate Kid style as well, but that's not a normal human thing to do. So that's the first time there was a hint of, wait a second, what was that? You know, a little bit of superhuman, little Seth 2.0 right there for us to see.
What does he do with the fly after he catches it?
He opens his hand and the fly goes away.
Oh, okay.
But we know right then and there.
Mr. Miyagi let the fly go too. And
Well, so did Danielson.
Yeah, you got to let the fly go if you catch it. You have to.
Catch and release. But how many people are sleeping? Maybe we shoo it away. He grabs it, wakes up, and he just looks a little bit non-human. Right there, we know. Wow, something happened to him. He's fly-esque right now.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Then I think maybe someone would watch this and all of a sudden maybe have images of Spider-Man in their head. They'll be like, oh.
Right.
well, he's going to have superpowers. It's going to be great, right? Like, you think this is going to be fantastic. He's going to be like Spider-Man here. Like, no, it doesn't turn out that way.
Well, it doesn't yet, but you're right. The very next scene, he wakes up and he's a little bit possessed. Now, this teleportation just happened several hours ago. So he gets up and he's got this different look on his face and he goes in his house and breaks out Olympic gymnastic routine. That's incredible, Sal. You know, it blew me away.
What I thought was funny about this, and yeah, this goes back to what I was saying earlier, is that even if you develop strength, right? Even if you do, all of a sudden are super strong, where do you all of a sudden... Well, first of all, why is there a parallel bar or a straight bar in your place? And then where do all of a sudden you know how to do what they call them swinging giants, I think they were called. But where do you learn gymnastics? That's what I want to... Unless, hang on, maybe he has a past in gymnastics, maybe in high school or something. We don't know that. Okay, we don't know that.
I just thought
it was funny that all of a sudden he knows gymnastics.
Yeah, that's true. We don't know the backstory of Seth Brundle, but he is great at it. But where he learned it from... I have no idea. But you know what? It works because knowing this is a scientist who probably doesn't have a background in it. Maybe he has.
Most likely not, yeah.
Maybe he has an affection to it or an interest in it.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's a great way to show his strength.
Yeah. And if you notice, then Ronnie is sitting there.
Yeah.
Enraptured by this.
Yeah.
I think actually getting aroused by it all.
Here we go.
Right? She's starting to get aroused by this while watching his feats, his newfound feats of strength. And then I think once he's done with his performance, I think they start to get it on again, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, they lead you to believe she is enraptured by it. They walk towards each other. He's sweaty and shirtless, and we cut away. So yeah, you're absolutely right. They could have went right back in the sack for all we know.
Yeah.
But instead we cut to them. And they're walking on the street in Toronto. But before that, I just want to say, Ronnie should have grabbed the old video camera and filmed this. Because it would have been a great thing to catch on camera. Yeah, not that he can't do it again, but he was just possessed to do it.
Sure.
And I know I talked about this earlier, but I like the lighting in his place too. It's just kind of dark and eerie. And everything just works. Like, it really is well done. So that whole sequence is not only... impressive from a physical standpoint, but it's also just shot very well.
Yeah.
And I really liked it, and I wish they had it on film. It would have made a great Instagram post nonetheless. And so now they're walking on the street. This is kind of a weird scene, but they stop and he buys Ronnie a little heart necklace from a local vendor.
Well, an interesting moment because she had previously said she doesn't wear jewelry.
Exactly.
So here he is putting a necklace around her neck with a heart pendant.
And it's a sweet moment. They kiss each other, you know?
Yeah.
And you thought this movie had no drama. Gosh.
Yeah. No. There is a... You know what? You always got to have a love story, I think, no matter what. No matter horror or comedy or sci-fi, whatever. You got to have some sort of love story, I think.
Raises the stakes as well. Now we're invested in these people. They love each other. They're connected. And we know it's not going to last. So
no, it's doomed.
It's doomed. And now we're at this coffee shop. And I really like this scene, how it goes down. You get Goldblum and he's kind of, you know, fast talking, but take it away.
Well, I would say the word would be manic. It's one thing to have the physical prowess and the agility. That's great. But he's starting to get hypermania is what's happening to him. And he's like adding sugar to his coffee and adding sugar to it. And she even says, oh, do you want a little coffee with your sugar?
And he doesn't even take a sip of it. It's like he's so coked up, but he's just, his body is changing at a rapid pace.
It would be like a hyper puberty in his 30s is what's happening.
And it's happening in the span of like 12 hours.
Yes, yes. And so he's all going nuts in this cafe. And then he yells at the waiter. He's like, hey, give me a, what is it, calzone? What is he at? What is
he wants something, but he just wants him to come over and get his order. Yeah, he's very irritable all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Extremely. And manic is the right word for that.
Yeah.
Now we're back at Seth's house, and this is a long sex scene, or at least they insinuate the fact that they've been going at it for hours, and he's got this boundless energy, and Ronnie is exhausted. She wants a break. All of a sudden, Sal, his face in this scene is breaking out. He's got dark patches. It looks different. And he's really changing very quickly. And he's just got this nonstop sex drive energy. And she's just, you know, She's still human, Sal. She can't keep up with this guy, this super
fly. He's not looking so good.
No.
And she even says, as he wants to continue, I don't know how you can have any more fluid left in you.
Yeah, fluids. Yeah.
So, geez, he's probably like dropped like 6 loads already in like a, what like.
So if she hadn't conceived on the previous scene, this brings it home.
Well, they're having lots of sex.
Unprotected sex. Lots of it.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is the 80s. This is actually, if you look at 86.
Yes.
An interesting time to be having unprotected sex.
HIV, AIDS was across the world. It was a huge thing, and unprotected sex was taboo. And I remember reading something about Cronenberg, who had mentioned that some people were connecting this movie a little bit with AIDS, how he had changed so much in it. But you're absolutely right. I'm assuming that's where you were going with this.
Wow. People thought that his transformation was symbolic of AIDS? I never heard that.
Well, there was just some parallels, that's all.
Interesting.
And I thought, I could see the comparisons early on. He's deforming, he's decaying, he's got these spots on his face. You know, there's a little, and this is the time. I mean, they're filming this movie in 85. It's coming out in 86. This was definitely a hot topic thing and a very scary thing across the country.
Yeah, there could have been hints of symbolism. Yeah, I could see that.
Sure. I don't think it was intentional. I just think it was what was happening. It was just at the same time.
Yeah.
So as Ronnie gets a break, what does she notice on Seth's back?
Oh, she runs her hands across his back in the same location where he was previously cut by that. What was that?
Some sort of microprocessor.
The microprocessor cut into his back. She feels along his wound. At first, they look like stitches at first.
Right.
But then you realize these are like black, thick, very thick hairs.
Very thick. Coarse.
Very coarse hairs growing out of this wound in a very odd way. And I do think it's funny. She went over to grab some sort of kitchen shears and starts cutting some of these.
Yeah. And gets a few samples off. Doesn't even get the whole thing, but does cut some.
Yeah.
And then, Sal, Seth just changes even more. He's demanding that Ronnie goes through and, you know, teleports herself. He won't let it go.
Yeah, well, he wants to be some sort of a super couple or power couple or something.
Well, yeah, he wants her to go through because she needs to experience what he's experiencing.
Yeah, okay, so that could be almost like a drug parallel. Like, oh my God, this drug is so good. You got to try it. You got to try what I'm on, man. You know, it's one of those things. Like he was feeling such immense power, he wanted her to feel it too.
But he gets so mad, and this is just so sudden. I mean, they're literally having sex not a couple minutes earlier, and now he's demanding she goes in the telepod, and she says no. And he's like, fine, I'll get someone who can keep up with me.
Yeah.
Like that's how fast he's changing, you know, because his mind, his body, he has no control, and he heads out. He leaves.
Yeah. He puts on his leather jacket without a shirt.
Yeah.
And heads out the door.
Heads out, walking the streets. Finds a bar, spots a girl, and gets into an arm wrestling contest.
Yeah, I think that arm wrestling scene is something kind of legendary. He gets into an arm wrestling match, wagers $100, and he gets to take the barfly home.
Tawny.
Okay, he gets to take her home. He says, if I beat you, I get to take her home. The guys are laughing at him. Oh, yeah, this puny guy, you know. He sits down against like some sort of burly truck driver type guy.
Yep.
And at first they're going at it, almost looks even. The other guy's struggling. Seth Brundle doesn't really look like he's breaking a sweat.
Not at all.
The burly guy keeps going for it, keeps going for it. Boom, his arm breaks his right wrist. Above his wrist.
Yeah.
You see his bone come out.
Oh, terrible.
Wonderful special effects. Fantastic special effects. Poor guy. And then Seth Brundle grabs the girl and hightails it out of there.
So, Sal, when was the last time that you were in an arm wrestling contest?
Surely in my 20s, maybe in my early 20s. I don't think I've been in an arm wrestling. Yeah, it's been since my early 20s. Nothing recent.
No, I'm not a big arm wrestling guy. And this scene was just too funny. To go into a bar and see that going on was great. But it worked because here's a guy with great strength. So his plan was to come back with a woman. He's got one. He gets Tawny back to his apartment lab. And I guess there's no elevator. It's the first time we're hearing of this, or it wasn't working. So he has to go up the stairs, and she's tired. So he carries Tawny and literally runs up the stairs holding her.
Yeah, kind of reminiscent of a honeymoon couple.
Well, he's like Superman, though. It's really a cool scene. You're seeing that this guy has superhuman strength now.
Yeah. And you know what I definitely found fascinating is that he doesn't look so good.
No, he's looking terrible.
He's looking ripe. And Tani goes along. And it's like, why would you go with this guy?
Well, they went to a few more bars after he picked her up. She's like, well, yeah, I'll go back to your place. Can we hit some bars first? So she's probably trashed. And then they're going back. So she's just going along with it. But he's not looking sick. He doesn't look healthy. He looks very sick.
And think of how he smelled. Didn't he just have hours of hot sex with Ronnie earlier? Didn't shower, put on the jacket, ran off.
Yep.
He's fresh. He's got a fresh quality.
I totally agree. So now they're in his place and he goes to the telepods in front of her to show her, because I think he feels that going through them is like a hot shower. It wakes him up. He thinks it, but he does not know what's going on. It has nothing to do with going through. It's the fact that he went through with the fly. And he comes out, he's naked, goes right to her, and has sex with Tawny.
Yeah, yeah, right out of the pod.
So Sal, Tawny also could be pregnant with child.
Whoa, I didn't even think about that. Wow, okay, the fly three.
Or the fly two, we kicked the second one to the curb and I want to redo, a mulligan.
I like it. What if Tawny comes back in the fly two, giving birth?
Tawny and Ronnie. Ronnie and Tawny. Come on, man. I love this. So after sex with Tawny, he tries to talk her into going through and do the teleportation.
Yeah.
And he's starting to get worked up, talk her into it, and then Ronnie arrives.
Yeah, and Ronnie gives the famous line.
Famous line.
That was on the movie poster, I believe.
Yes, it was.
Because Ronnie walks in, hears Tawny say, I'm afraid. And Ronnie says, be afraid. Be very afraid.
And there it is.
And that is the line. That is the line. That is the movie poster line.
You can build a franchise around that line. Perfect.
A fantastic line.
And Tawny leaves. That was her exit. And thank goodness Ronnie came in because she got out. Well, she might be pregnant, but she got out of there. And so Ronnie now sheds light on the fact that she had those hairs analyzed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he thought, well, that's a weird thing to go do. But what do we find out about those hairs?
Yeah, she says that her friend at the lab looked at the hairs. Not only are they not human, right? But did she say insect?
Insect hairs.
Yeah, insect hairs growing out of your back. Seth, are you hearing this?
He's like, that's weird. So she leaves and he goes to the bathroom, and he takes his fingernail off. He sees it's kind of loose, and it comes off, and pus is coming out. It reminds me of that scene in Poltergeist when the guy goes in the mirror and his face starts to come apart. It's a really well done and extremely uncomfortable and grotesque scene.
Now that you mentioned the drama in this movie, or you mentioned it, calling it a drama, there are these times when the horror comes back, and I kind of forgot it was a horror movie. You know, it's like, oh yeah, I'm watching a horror movie, a horror sci-fi. I forgot. I thought I was watching just a dramatic movie with a love story. Oh yeah, we're watching horror. I forgot. And it kind of surprises me.
And that's what I love about this movie. It's got layers to it. You're comfortable here. Oh, we got this. I mean, it wasn't 3 minutes ago that they were having a wonderful romantic scene on the street buying her a necklace. And now he's decayed to the point that his body's falling apart and he's having sex with a stranger. The movie is all over the place, but in a good way.
Even though there are much grosser moments in this movie, when he's in the bathroom there taking off his nail and then his fingers start to ooze that milky, that was so gross to me. Man. That was one of the grossest things.
Still makes me cringe.
Yeah, like what was that? What is that coming out of him?
Well, here's what we do know. Right then and there, Seth knows there's a problem. He may have denied it before, said, hey, I'm feeling pretty good about myself. I'm strong. I can do gymnastics. I can have sex for hours with multiple partners. This is amazing. Hold on. My body's falling apart.
He knows. What? Talk about symbolism. Now we're getting into the possible symbolism of drug addiction, where the person has to admit, wow, maybe there is something wrong.
Yeah. I have a problem.
Yeah.
I have a problem. And I'm Seth Brundle. Now Seth goes to his computer and starts to run some reports and just to analyze what happened in his successful teleportation, the first one.
He's reviewing what occurred. I guess the computer saves the analysis.
Yeah.
It records it, and he can go back and watch what happened.
So he slowly starts to find out with 1980s graphics that there was a fly in the telepod with him.
Ugh.
As he analyzes further, what do we find out?
Well, first thing is I'm realizing that he could have programmed the computer to cease once it detects an object other than the primary transporter or transported. So yeah, he didn't program that properly. Well, we find out that he merged with the fly.
Right.
He didn't absorb the fly. That's what he thought at first. I think he asked the question.
Yeah, I'm a human being. Here's a fly. A fly's tiny.
Sure.
I could swallow a fly. It's gross, but I could easily do that. So he just assumes, yes, did Brundle absorb the fly? But that's not what happened.
No. What did it say? A merger at the genetic level, something like that?
Yeah, fusion of Brundle and fly at the molecular genetic level.
Okay, so when he reads that, he knows, oh no.
It's that tight shot of his eyes, and it's like almost the horror music, dun, dun, dun. Mm-hmm. He knows, uh-oh, how do I reverse engineer this quick?
Yeah, not good.
So now we go forward in time, which is kind of nice because now we cut away and we're with Ronnie, and the phone rings, and Seth is calling her and asking her to come to him. And so it's kind of a nice cutaway because now we have a chance to progress his mutation more. And so Ronnie shows up. And Sal, when Ronnie walks in, she's just mortified when she sees him.
Yeah, because not only does he look hideous, but he's got like this vomit stains all over his shirt. He's walking with these two crutches. Yeah. He looks really horrific and pathetic.
Absolutely. And the place is a mess. I mean, he's just gone. He's probably been on his computer trying to figure out a way. And also, it's not like he's got his wits about him the whole time. We saw how erratic he was. We saw some of the decisions he's been making. Just because now he knows something's wrong, I'd say he's probably still struggling to have his, you know, all of his faculties about him.
Well, he's not only physically mutating, he's going nuts.
Exactly. So he might have times where he can go to the computer and figure things out. And then there's times that he's probably fighting the fly within himself.
Yeah. As we all do.
I know. I'm always dealing with that fly.
The inner fly.
The inner fly. And so now he explains to Ronnie what has happened.
Yeah.
Exactly what he knows. She can't believe it, but obviously it makes a lot of sense. Again, I would be filming this every stage of this. This is big news, as tragic as it is. This has never happened as far as we know, and I would be documenting everything. So
she was commissioned to kind of be his biographer.
Right.
Right? And then what, all of a sudden, just because everything goes to hell, you stop being the biographer? I mean, a biographer is supposed to be there to capture the good, the bad, the ugly.
Well, they let the romance get in the way.
Oh, yeah.
And so that's why she took a break. And you're right. Just keep it business. Don't go personal. But while he's explaining what went wrong, we see how he eats his food.
Oh.
Which is how, so.
You know what? This movie is probably up there as far as grossness with The Thing. John Carpenter's The Thing. As far as grossness.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even think movies, you know, slasher flicks can compete with movies like this when it comes to just sheer grossness. But what a fly does, and this is what now Seth Brundle does, is they don't have the proper enzymes to absorb the food. So what they do is they hack up this corrosive fluid that kind of pre-digests the food. Then they kind of slurp it up.
Right.
So that's what he does right in front of Ronnie. He hacks up the fluids and starts to pre-digest his food, then slurps it up. Oh, I'm sure it's a wonderful, wonderful scene.
If that's not bad enough, then one of his ears falls off.
Yes. A traditional lend me your ear moment taken too literally.
And then Ronnie, yes, very literally. And Ronnie begins to cry. It's just too much for her to take in. And she leaves and she goes to meet with Stathis and explains what's going on. And he urges her, much like I just said, to film him or tape him, continue documenting this amazing and morbid and grotesque transformation that's happening.
Yeah. So she does that. She finally goes back to videotaping him, as she should have been doing, like we said. So yeah, she videotapes him having lunch, right?
Yes. But Stathis is not built an empire by doing things casually. I mean, Stathis knows this could be something huge for Monolith Publishing and Particle Magazine, right?
Okay, yeah. So he's still thinking of the hot story, the lead story, the story of the year,
right?
The possible Pulitzer winning prize story. Sure. Okay.
So yeah, I believe that she's kind of put her jealousy aside because honestly, Sal, the relationship is over for all intents and purposes at this point in time.
Yeah.
The sexual relationship, where they were potentially headed. And when she goes over this time, Seth is now, with no crutches, he's crawling on the wall and ceiling.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So very now this quickly.
This is the Spider-Man moment where he's having the superpowers. This is the superpowers moment. He's crawling on the ceiling like a fly, defying gravity.
Very Lionel Richie-esque as well, I might add. And actually, I watched the Dancing on the Ceiling video the other day, and it's actually pretty funny.
I'm going to watch it.
As cheesy as it is, it's 80s cheesy in all the right ways. And it's a great special effect. I really like to see Seth move around. And it's nice to get him mobile again, because just the last scene, he could barely walk 5 feet.
Yeah,
and now he's cruising around, so his metamorphosis is continuing at a rapid speed. And so he's moving around, comes down, and he's got better spirits about himself now. He's kind of excited because he's like, I'm excited because I know what I am. I'm turning into something, and that's great. Not many human beings can do that. And then he coins the term, which we've already said, but he coins the term and calls himself
Brundlefly.
Brundlefly. It's a great name, by the way.
Yeah, it's good.
Says it all. And so, yes, now she's recording him eating. It's very grotesque, as we've already said. Very
disgusting.
Grotesque. And I like the way that we show it. It's being filmed, and then we cut to Stathis watching it.
This was the original reaction video.
Yeah, this is it.
Stathis reacting to Seth Brundlefly.
And so some more time has passed because she brought the video home. She's given it to Stathis. He's watching it. He's watching it at her house. So there's a lot of things at play. Maybe now that things have changed, Stathis is back in the good graces. We don't really get into that, but he's at her place. Maybe because they're in tandem to kind of solve this crazy thing that's going on. But Ronnie comes in the scene as Stathis is watching this. And she's got some more news to pile on. And this is something we talked about earlier, which is the fact that
Ronnie is pregnant.
Booyah.
Dun, dun, dun.
I knew it. I knew it.
What's interesting also is there was no, I mean, this was out of nowhere, right?
Out
it's
nowhere.
Not like, oh, I had morning sickness or anything. It's, or I feel bloated. Boom, I'm pregnant.
We don't have time for that.
Yeah, yeah. No time for that.
We got to move right into it. You are pregnant. Tawny, who knows? But Ronnie, our girl, she's pregnant.
Yeah.
And so now, Sal, we're at the hospital and Ronnie is in labor and there's a lot of things going on. You got David Cronenberg there, which is kind of nice to see.
Yes.
And she is giving birth not to a human in this scene. I believe it's like an insect larva.
Well, because we don't know that this is a dream sequence yet.
No.
Right?
We do
not. We think this is really happening. So they're inducing labor, right?
You're right. We don't know anything. This is happening. And I'm really good at spotting dream sequences. But I think when I first saw this movie, I think I bought the fact that it was happening.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you don't know. Because, yeah, there's no lead-in to make us believe that it's a dream sequence. Just all of a sudden, when that larva comes out, which is a fantastic scene. I mean, how horrific.
Oh, it was terrible. It was huge.
How horrific to give birth to a giant fly larva maggot.
I think she screams and then she screams herself awake.
Yeah.
So that's a night. I'm not a huge fan of dream sequences, but if you're going to do it, this is how you do it. And of course, the ones from American Werewolf in London are also great because they're just so different and unorthodox and terrifying.
Well, one of the dream sequences in American Werewolf in London is the double nightmare. The double nightmare, yes.
Yeah, we keep saying dream sequence. It's a nightmare sequence.
It's a nightmare, yeah. It's a horrible nightmare.
It's a dream sequence, but it's a nightmare. And she wakes up, but she wakes up and that's changed her, you know, her MO. She's got to have an abortion. She does not want, she knows that can happen. She knows how grotesque Seth is. I mean, she's the only person that's seen Seth. She's the only person that's been around him. I mean, Stathis has seen the video, but he's not interacted with him. Mm-hmm. And so now we have Seth working away on his computer and he's trying to lower his fly percentage. Like maybe reverse engineer himself. Like, what can he do? And he's having a hard time on that computer. He's got, you know, gloves on. He's losing fingers. He's using like pencils to type the key. His voice is no longer recognizable because this is the 80s, but he had voice recognition software on his computer.
Yeah.
But even that's faded because it can't recognize his voice anymore.
No, his voice is becoming more.
Maybe not. I should have never had you do that fly. So he loses some teeth, which is also gnarly. And you see them pop out on the keypad there and on his keyboard. And I love that he's keeping things, these mementos. And he walks it into the medicine cabinet, opens it up, and there's a ton of his body parts.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Well, you know, my mom keeps her kids' first haircuts.
Okay.
Hair.
Yeah, that's innocent.
Baby teeth.
I've kept Brody's and Nico's first tooth for a long time and something.
Yeah.
He's got a lot of things in the medicine cabinet. And I dare to say, I think I saw his penis.
No.
I think it's there. It's a real quick pan. God. And so I think I saw Brundlefly's penis.
Wow. I can't believe I'm saying this, but I'm actually going to try to look back and see.
Or just Google what I just said. It may just come up for you online.
Like, if I were just a healthy individual, I would just take your word for it.
Yeah.
But instead, I'm going to actually research it.
Whatever it is, there was a lot of things in that was very grotesque. And the fact that he's hoarding these things, keeping these mementos, it was just, it speaks volumes to where he's at in his mental state.
Yeah, because it's not like he's saving them because he wants to do experiments on them.
No.
He's just saving them as like souvenirs.
Yeah. Remember when I used to have this nose? Remember this?
Yeah.
But it makes for a grotesque scene, and this movie's full of them in a good way. So now Ronnie arrives for an emotional exchange.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really good scene. And you can tell this is where they're working very well together. Obviously, they're dating. They're close. They've already made a movie together. But real chemistry. And she's distraught because she came there to tell him what, Sal?
She came to say that she was pregnant, right?
Right.
Yeah, but this is where he tells her that if you stay, I could hurt you, right? Or I'm going to hurt you.
Yeah, he's pushing her away, but she doesn't have the strength to tell him that she's pregnant.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because right before she starts to get further into it is where he says, you better leave because I might hurt you.
Right.
And this is him ultimately realizing that he is now dangerous.
Yeah.
Exactly. I guess he didn't accept that before. Because what did he say? He talks about insect politics, that insects don't have politics. He will hurt her if she stays.
That's exactly right. And it's well said. I'm glad you said that. He does use that terminology, insect politics.
I really like the way Jeff Goldblum portrays this character at this juncture, because he's got the flicks of the tongue and the darting of the eyes.
Yes, yes. All
definitely
very good.
Like insect mannerisms, right there.
That kind of reminds me of Chet in Weird Science, played by the late and great Bill Paxton.
Remember rest in peace.
Rest in peace, Bill Paxton. But remember he was turned into that creature?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah,
and he's
with the crew cut?
Crew cut, and the fly goes by, of all things, and he grabs it with his huge tongue and then can't believe it. He's like, ah! So nice little tip of the cap to a John Hughes, also rest in peace, classic film. And so now Ronnie leaves and Stathis is outside and he's like, what's the hurry? And I really couldn't tell what was going on with Stathis here. He was pulling a little bit of Aliens and Paul Reiser's character in that movie, where, if you remember that movie, the classic James Cameron film, he's trying to set up Ripley to get impregnated by the alien. And he sets it up where that's going to happen so he can bring it back. Well, I couldn't tell if Stathis was pulling that with her, like, you know, do you need to do the abortion now? Sleep on it. Knowing what Seth is he thinking she's got this potential thing in her that could be the biggest news of all time? Is that what's going on? Because why keep it?
Yeah, you know what? I don't know. I don't know if we think that Stathis is that slimy.
Because he also cares for her. If he cares for her, he would want her to have abortion right away. I was just a little torn there. Like, maybe he wants her to be okay with this. Hopefully that's what it was. And not the latter, the sinister guy who has, you know, this bigger agenda. But I don't think it's that. It just felt like that for a second.
I just got the feeling he was saying, okay, you want an abortion, but why does it need to be tonight? You know, it could be tomorrow. It could be Tuesday. Like, it doesn't need to be this very moment.
That makes sense. It was just the way he said you could think about it, sleep on it. I just thought, oh, is there some ulterior motives here? I hope not, because I want to like Stathis more. So I'll go with that. But when this is going on, Sal, Brundle eavesdrops on this.
Yeah, he's on the rooftop, kind of seen like a Hunchback of Notre Dame
thing
happening. So he's like observing from the rooftop. He hears everything. He's probably got super fly hearing now. So he hears everything that she's saying about, I want this baby out of me. So this is where Seth Brundle realizes that he has a little half fly baby, a little maggot in utero.
Yes, exactly. And his whole agenda changes. He sent her away. I didn't know this. And so now we go to the hospital. It's late at night. They have an exchange with this doctor. And he's also saying, we got to do this tonight. Uh-huh. And Stathis knows him, has a relationship with him, and says, yes, we believe the father of the child is, what do they say?
Deformed? He says deformed. Yeah. The father is deformed.
Yeah, because he's never going to believe the story about turning into a fly.
Sure.
So he's
The father is a half fly.
Here, watch this video of him eating. And so the doctor agrees. But that's as far as we get because something crazy happens.
Yeah. So she starts to prep, like get into the robe and the gown, and the doctor's, I guess, going to go wash up. He's going to do the abortion, right?
Right.
And out of nowhere, I don't think anybody for the first time watching would expect this. So there she is thinking, okay, she's going to have the abortion, right? That's good. There's this big, one of those
cell blocks, windows.
Yes. Glass, plastic looking cell blocks. So Brundlefly just bursts through. And look, she didn't put up much of a fight.
No.
In fact, none at all.
You're right. She was almost like, okay, this is supposed to happen. And I know that you had issues with this when we kind of talked about this film at one point in time, but we don't see him fly. He is a fly.
Oh,
this
I remember.
Called
no,
the
I
fly.
Remember. Yeah.
But he does hop down. He has superpowers, but maybe speak to this point.
Okay, so my big disappointment in the movie was that we never get to see him sprout wings. I want him to become an actual fly, sprout wings, and actually fly. And we never get to see that, and that's very disappointing to me.
Or just sprout the wings. You would have settled for like just a wing reveal on the
plane. Yeah, because then we think, oh boy, he's gonna fly. At least we think he's gonna fly.
But we never really see the end of his mutation either, because we're about to the end of the movie, but he's still mutating up until the end. So I believe that still could have happened. We just ran out of time.
He could eventually sprout wings.
But he's got superpowers because he made it across town, Sal, and we know he doesn't like to drive or be in cars. So he probably hopped building to building. He also just broke through this wall of glass that no human being could do, grabs her, Stathis comes out. Sorry, kidnaps her. Actually, I had a note saying rescue/kidnapped, but I keep referring to rescue.
It's a fine line.
It's a fine line. This is the 80s, Sal. And so he grabs her and just jumps off the building. So we're led to believe he's just jumping and, you know, scaling buildings, just hopping around. And we also know that he can crawl up buildings and surfaces. So we've seen that. But anyway, he gets her. And he takes her back to his place. And so Stathis...
At this point, it's his lair.
Yeah. He's back in the lair. But Stathis also heads to the lair. And I got to give this guy credit. He knows what he's up against. And Stathis isn't calling the cops.
No,
isn't getting anyone involved.
No.
He goes to Seth's house, lair, and he has a gun that he assembles. And he is going there to save her. And I got to give him all the credit in the world because I would have called any and everybody to come with him. He's also Monolith Publishing. Why not get the news involved now? You got yourself a story here.
Yeah, you could have called five of your finest reporters to get on the scene.
Totally.
But yeah, he goes there with that gun that he puts together. Now, I got to hand it to him also, but he waits until he's in the building to put the gun together.
I know.
He doesn't do it outside. I don't understand that.
It's kind of a cool scene, but yes, I think I would go in guns a-blazing, and I'm going to have more than a shotgun. But I do like the setup. I like that he goes there, and no one's there. It's just him.
Yeah. And he thinks.
And he's walking around, and he goes to the computer, and he sees on the screen, Sal, it says gene splicing mythology. Hmm. It says telepod 1. Transmitter of subject A, telepod 2, transmitter of subject B, telepod 3, receiver of genetically fused AB combination subject. In layman's terms, Sal, what is Brundle's new plan?
Well, he believes, I guess his hypothesis, is that if he merges with another human, he would essentially dilute the fly. Right? He would kind of dilute the fly because he'd have more human DNA.
Right. And also morph with said human and become a super person.
Wow. Okay, so he's starting to get he's not just trying to save himself. He wants to go to next level.
And this all came about when he found out about the child. This was the catalyst. Because he was telling her, leave, I'm dangerous, that scene. He overhears why they drive to and get set up at the hospital. Old Brundle fly cranked away on this. It's like, oh, you know what? And puts this together. I can get myself in a pod, Ronnie and child in a pod. And then in the third pod, we'll fuse together as a family. Yes, diluting the fly some, but also just being one cohesive family.
Wow.
In one person.
Interesting concept in and of itself, even in spite of a fly. Just an interesting concept of fusion, fusions with other people. Very interesting.
Brundle family.
Yes.
So, but Wystatus learns this information. What happens, Sal?
Yeah, so here he is looking at the computer. He's now putting everything together. And then, right off the ceiling. Isn't that where he is? He's off the ceiling. Kind of falls down. Boom. Lands on top of him, right? Doesn't he land on him?
Yep.
Yeah, in an attack mode.
Well, because he's got the gun in his hand, too. So he just, quickly disperses that. But it doesn't stop there, Sal. He doesn't stop there. This is when it goes to next level.
Yeah. So Brundlefly vomits the corrosive enzyme onto Stathis' left hand, I think it is. Yeah, and melts his hand. I mean, Stathis is going to need a hook like Candyman after this.
Yes, he is.
And then Stathis kind of faints in shock, falls on the ground.
Yep.
And then Brundlefly continues his menu and vomits on his leg, which then effectively amputates his leg from about the ankle down.
Yep.
His foot, rather.
Right.
Yeah, here's Stathis on the ground now without a foot and without a hand.
And he's about to go in for the kill. He is. He's leaning over him and Ronnie comes in and stops him and screams at him to stop.
Yeah.
And he tells her, help me be human.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's asking for help. There's the plea. And then he explains his plan, of which we just talked about. And I mean, this is terrifying news to her. She's of sound mind and body, and she wants to have this child, removed or have aborted. And she has no interest in this crazy new Brundle family plan.
No.
And so she tries to fight. And in this sequence, Sal, it's interesting because as she's fighting, Seth, I guess he's no longer Seth, Brundle Fly, is losing more of his body.
Oh, yeah.
And his head comes off and it's more of the fly. It's the final version of that Brundle Fly head. And then he just literally just flings and tosses, throws Ronnie into the telepod and closes the door. So his plan is in motion and he's too strong to fight.
A wonderful transformation scene, a really, really, I think, iconic transformation scene as he's falling apart and the fly is coming out more. Very well done. Very great special effects.
I'm glad you brought up The Thing earlier because that movie had a great transformation scenes in them is the thing. And then sometimes the people would get tested with the blood and the guy would churn in front of you. And then in American Werewolf in London, another amazing scene courtesy of Rick Baker. But this movie does it as well. It's like these directors, Carpenter, Landis, Cronenberg, they got it right, man. They raised the stakes and they probably ruined it for a lot of other people because this is how you do it. Yeah. And this one in particular, like I said earlier, Brundlefly's mutation never stops. No. There's no final, we don't even get to the final thing in the end because I think there could have still been wings potentially like you wanted. It's amazing that it just continues to go forward. Yeah, it's you don't see that. And we take it for granted. Now we're reflecting on this movie from the 80s going, wow, I've not seen something like that.
It probably would be one of the longest running mutations on film.
Yeah, absolutely. And so he gets inside his pod and the countdown is beginning.
Mm-hmm.
It's on.
Yeah.
But Stathis comes too.
Mm-hmm.
This guy's kind of a hero.
Oh, this is the arc I was talking about. At this point, you're down with Stathis.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a hero. He's got Ronnie's back.
Yep.
And he's delivering. And here he is. Yeah, he aims that gun at one of the cables, which I thought was an odd choice. But hey, okay.
Right.
I think I would have aimed for one of the pods. But yeah, it worked. So he aims for the cables.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, he actually shoots
that's
one of the
do it. He figures that could stop it.
I think it's great. I would have thought the pod, you know. But no, great. Shoot the cable. You shoot the connection. It's over, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So he shoots the cable. Then one pod stops working, but the other one still working. The one that Brundlefly is in is still working.
Yes, correct. So to be clear, Ronnie's opens. Hers stops, luckily. And, you know, the door opens and she comes out. But Brundle's continues to count down. And there is a teleportation.
Yeah, what happened was Brundlefly winds up in the pod number 3, somehow fused with the pod 2. He somehow fuses with it. That's why he comes out with this creature with like these cables intertwined.
So the door opens for him and he's just barely crawling. He doesn't have the strength and the wherewithal to harm them because the insect is taking over at this point in time.
Yeah. But okay. So here though, is the sympathy. Now you go, oh my God, how pathetic is he now? You know?
So yeah, he comes crawling out and Stathis is just barely hanging on. So Ronnie grabs the shotgun.
Mm-hmm. Well, she doesn't want to do it at first. She's struggling with it.
Well, she just has it as a protection device as he comes crawling towards her and holds it up. And then Brundlefly himself with his hand reaches out and like pulls the barrel to his head, right?
Yeah. Very.
That was a really well done touching scene because you knew very within touching. That fly, this grotesque thing, Seth Brundle is in there. In that moment, it's not 100% fly. He's there saying, just end this. Yeah, that was really touching.
And that's where you kill the creature, not out of defense, but out of mercy.
Right. And as much as it's hard for Ronnie to do, she is the one to do it. And it's a sympathy and it's the right thing for her to do. And she blows Brundlefly away.
Yeah. Yeah.
This movie doesn't shy away from those scenes. And Brundlefly blows up everywhere. And that's it. It's over.
It does seem to have a sudden ending, don't you think?
They show Stathis. He's in shock. And rightfully so. He's lost a hand. He's lost part of his leg. Yeah. And he just witnessed something that is more horrific than you could ever imagine, but it just ends. Boom. Music cue.
Ronnie is in tears.
Yeah.
Now, she shoots and then is crying.
If you had your way, you might hear one more callback to your famous noise.
Once she's crying, Ronnie's crying, and then you hear in the distance. And where it's coming from? Her belly. That's where it's coming from.
That's it. And movie. And that's it, Sal. What an incredible film.
Yeah. You know what? If you're a horror sci-fi fan.
Drama.
I mean, drama. Okay. Yeah. Fantastic. Really fantastic. And again, the drama was so good. I, at moments, forgot I was watching a horror sci-fi. The horror comes up and I go, oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot. So it took me in and out. So yeah, I definitely enjoyed it. And I would say that as an adult, I appreciate the movie even more having seen it recently as compared to I saw it when I was a youngster.
And that is exactly what this podcast is all about. It's talking about great films to inspire people to either revisit a movie that you loved and it's been forever. You can see the film in a new light and appreciate it in a whole new way. Or see a movie you've never seen that's sitting there waiting to be discovered. So it's also a treat for us to do because it gets us to go back and revisit it and see if it holds up. And this one, Sal, absolutely does. Much like all the movies on previous podcasts. And let me just plug the show for a second. We've already done American Werewolf in London. We've done Wall Street. And we've done To Live and Die in LA. So please go back and listen to those earlier episodes because these are all great movies. But what a great one. Cronenberg absolutely delivered, as did Jeff Goldblum,
yeah.
Gina Davis, and John Getz.
Yeah, yeah. Great cast. Again, a three-person cast aside from a few ancillary characters. A three-person cast, great job, great emotion,
yes.
Great special effects, yep. Great horror, great grossness. I mean, there is that gross factor that I think a good horror has to have.
Yep.
As I get older, I start to appreciate it less. But yeah, the good gross factor is good in good horror. So yes. Definitely appreciate it. Yeah, this movie, definitely liked it a lot.
So now I'll just do a little trivia, like to end the episodes with little takeaways, little nuggets. So Brundlefly's transformation often took 5 hours to apply 5 pounds of makeup to Goldblum, especially in the later, more grotesque scenes. And yeah, I could imagine. Absolutely. He is carrying this huge suit around him. I mean,
This
is back in the 80s, all practical effects. Yeah, I could see that. And very impressive. And well done, Goldblum.
You know, if anybody has ever had prosthetics put on, like, for example, I've worked at some haunted houses for Halloween, you know, for Halloween season, had prosthetics put on my face.
Yeah.
If you're the kind of person who gets claustrophobic, you're going to feel that. And right. So when I see somebody, like in this instance, Jeff Goldblum in The Fly, or you see other people like the guy who's always in the Guillermo del Toro movies in the suit, the skinny guy, Doug Jones.
Right.
These people who can do that, as someone myself who's claustrophobic,
right.
I got to hand it to these people who can get in these prosthetics and stay in there for hours, and it takes hours to get on, hours to get off, can barely breathe. I got to hand it to these people. That's another level of sweet suffering.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. It would be tough. But, you know, I'm sure Jeff Goldblum took a good portion of the $15 million to do that. So
I'll take it. I'll try it.
Good
I'll
job.
Try it.
Good job, Goldblum. As you were talking, I was thinking back to American Werewolf in London again, because Griffin Dunne's character, not just the transformation of the werewolf, but his character continued to mutate as the movie went on.
And it's a long transformation.
Long transformation. Yeah. He's not a main character as the movie goes on, but every time you check in with him, he's gone further down the decayed road.
Yeah.
And it's very impressive. Okay, another one is the design of Brundle's telepods were inspired by the engine cylinder of Cronenberg's Ducati 450 Desmo motorcycle.
Oh, that's funny. A motorcycle, huh?
Yeah. Hmm. So I also think it harkens something from Alien or Aliens. But yeah, who knew? I'm not familiar with that motorcycle, but I'm sure there's something there they drew from.
Hmm. I like it.
So the famous help me line was spoken in both versions of The Fly. In the 1958 film, Vincent Price and Herbert Marshall required several takes to shoot the scene because they could not stop laughing. Now, I'm assuming that scene was much funnier. You've seen that movie, and that particular scene, I guess it was more comedic than this Fly?
Well, by today's standards, maybe, but I think at the end of the movie, spoiler alert, I think you have one of the characters in The Fly, I forgot who it was, the end of the movie, he has a fly body and a human head, and he's caught in a spider web, and a spider is about to get him, and he says, help me. And that's when another character then takes mercy and destroys him with a large stone.
Right. So I think that's, they were laughing because just the absurdity of the scene.
Sure.
There's a guy, you know, fly body, human head, and they found that hilarious. And it is pretty funny. However, in this version of The Fly, the context of the line is much more serious. And I highly doubt Goldblum was laughing. It's that line in the end when he says, help me become human. So it's not just help me, it's help me become human. Much different tone.
Sure.
But a nice tip of the cap to the original. And my last one, Musician Brian Ferry was hired to record a song to promote the film. Naturally, the track was entitled Help Me, and there was even a music video made, which includes footage from the film. Now, Cronenberg admitted to liking the song, but felt that it was inappropriate for the film, and therefore it was only used as background in the bar scene where Brundle arm wrestles. The track became rather obscure, and it was not included on the film's soundtrack, but later resurfaced on a compilation album by Brian Ferry and Roxy Music. And I personally agree with Cronenberg. The song is actually quite catchy, and the music video is so vintage 1980s, and I absolutely encourage you to see it.
Okay, so I'm going to look back into the arm wrestling scene for that song, right?
Or just go online and look up the video. The video is worth seeing.
Okay.
Because the video has these moments from the movie. I'm like, wow, I don't remember this.
Okay.
But yeah, it was the right decision, but I'm glad the song and music video found the light of day.
And I'm going to be going back to the medicine cabinet to look for Brundle Fly's penis.
That's true. You could do that as well. I have done it myself. So I was trying to spot everything that was in his medicine cabinet. So go give me a hit list of what's in there if you could, Sal, and report back.
Was it? Okay, yeah. I know the ear and the nails, yeah, and the teeth.
Oh, there's probably more. I think there's probably his nose could be in there. You know, lots of stuff. So that's all the trivia. Another great episode. Sal, it was a pleasure having you back for your second time on Let's Talk Movies. Always a pleasure to work with you and reflect on and talk movies.
Yes, thank you, Jason. I definitely hope to be on again.
Absolutely. So thanks so much for listening. And please be sure to subscribe, rate, and review the show wherever you get your podcast. You can also follow us on social media at Let's Talk Movies or check out our other shows at justcuriousmedia.com. So without further ado, please enjoy
The Fly.